the horn. Go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the Vegas play against. And Vegas has split. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, we were right there. We both predicted 48-7, and Alabama actually got a touchdown instead of the two field goals, so 49-7. We were right there. We're dialed in, right?
I think so, but we missed it by 1 point, man. So I guess we can't go bet on any college football games and relive our glory anytime soon.
Well, there's parts of that I think we're okay not reliving, but we'll save those stories for a meetup sometime. You want to jump in the offense, or is there something else you want to lead us off with?
You know, I am going to throw you a little bit of a curveball, non-intentional, and I think we might have a new segment for this year's podcast. We've yet to have one, but I think we need to explore a new segment for this year's podcast.
Well, I am intrigued because you have poobahed most of my segment ideas. I think we got the Q report and it was the Mosley report. So we've had two reports in 10 years. We've attempted others. So I am edge of seat.
All right. Well, this one, dude, I want your thoughts on doing this one, right? Because there's something to this. I think we have to have, I think we at least have to dive deeper on this podcast, if not an episode for future podcasts, on another Slade Bolden sighting.
All right. Tell me more.
Okay. The listeners want to know more about this person. Who is this person? Why is this person coming in and being inserted in very unusual situations in the offense? I mean, just like 2 weeks ago when he came into the game on a fourth down play to run a play on the offense. Coach Saban doesn't do things like that. What's up with this kid? Like, why is this kid getting the opportunity to do such things, I guess is my question for you.
So you want like a Where's Waldo style, Where's Slade?
Dude, I'm okay with that. I really want, yes. I mean, as you are watching these games and he's popped up a couple times now, are you not thinking to yourself, who is this kid and why is this kid like getting these opportunities just sprinkled in when he does?
Well, right now I'm just freaked out that are you looking over my shoulder because I have his name written down twice on my notes. So,
dude, we've been doing this show for a long time, right? And so, there's many times that we've been on the same wavelength, which I think helps the show. So it sounds like you were prepared to toss me the pitch and I just pitched it to you instead. So elaborate. What tell the listeners, what's the story with this kid?
Well, we've seen him play other positions, but you know, on Saturday alone, you know, obviously special teams and he had a tackle there. He had a reception, I want to say 17, 18, 19 yard reception, and he went in sort of a wildcat package at the quarterback position. It's not the first time. Saturday was not the first time that he's done any of those three things. He does seem to have something of a little specialty subset of plays and certainly brings a unique skill set to those. What I was going to talk about, and it was potential mini game ball material, but it's headline apparently no longer, right?
For the listeners real quick, wasn't he the kid that thwarted the fake punt? Wasn't he in on the tackle 2 weeks ago?
Yes. Seems like he was in on one of those tackles as well. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good call. You know, what stood out to me when he lined up at the quarterback position, and again, it was sort of the wildcat situation. Tua lined out wide to the left, and we were looking to, you know, just get a few yards for the touchdown. And what he did, he showed, and it was a simple little play, but it was the kind of play where you see not just freshmen, not just true freshmen, but it was the kind of play where you see players rush, try to rush the action and not let the action come to him. And Slade knew that he was going to pitch the ball to Najee, and Najee was going to run for the first down. So it was a little bit of an option, but he didn't force it. He took the ball, stood there, and waited for the defense to collapse to him so that he could pitch the ball out. He didn't try to run out. He didn't try to, you know, like I said, he didn't try to force the action. He let the action come to him. It was a, you know, one thousand, two thousand, three thousand, three and a half, one thousand. He's pitching the ball, but you could tell there was a pause, and then a pitch. And I just thought that was a great amount of poise, even for, we see senior quarterbacks, or we see senior players or upperclassmen that will try to rush a play. They know what they're supposed to do. They just do it now. And he took that pause. And so I think we're going to, and you talk about, you use the expression football intelligence. I think that was a sort of a subtle demonstration of that. We will see more Slade Bolden. Let me add just one more thought, because you're asking why this is out of sort of Saban's wheelhouse. I completely agree. We've seen over the last 10 years a progression of Saban, and I think this is part of it. I think that he used to eschew a special package or someone come in and just have a handful of plays, and I think he understands. I think it's a little bit of his, you know, relationship with Belichick, where it's, you know, hey, have a sub package, have a guy that can do 10 plays, and then you can run in and out of that without it adjusting. It adds a wrinkle to or a dimension to your offense without, you know, overhauling the offense. And so I think there's something there. I think we're going to see more Slade Bolden. I was thinking about it, and the announcer said it, you know, Saturday that you know, we'll see him pass because he played quarterback in high school. And I think he's just one of these dynamic, you know, not super uber athletic, but I think he's dynamic in that he can do a lot of things. And I think we're going to see more Slade Bolden. So clearly I had thought about this. It was a surprise that you went there first, but I was kind of wound up on Slade Bolden, so I probably had more there for you than you were thinking.
No, that's awesome, man. The listeners are glad to hear this. Well, for the listener's standpoint, this kid is a red shirt freshman, but this kid comes out of West Monroe, Louisiana. And so when I had this sighting, I had to go back and do some research here. And, you know, just to remind the listeners and myself, this kid was a four-star prospect 2 years ago. He was rated as the number 13th player in the state of Louisiana. And as we know, Louisiana is one of those four states, right, full of talent. So he was ranked as the number 25 athlete in the country and the 11th all-purpose back. Oh, by the way, he was named the Gatorade Louisiana Football Player of the Year, one of the top baseball players in Louisiana with a 4-point grade point average. And oh, by the way, he played quarterback his senior year in high school. The only reason I'm throwing that out for the listeners real quick is listen to all that crap I just said, right? That's a unique kid. So I think we're seeing this now because they redshirted him last year. And I think this was in the cards when he got recruited to come to Alabama, which just intrigues the hell out of me.
Yeah. I mean, he's the natural gym rat kind of guy, right? In sort of the age or era of specialization. I mean, he's probably the kid that ran out the front door, to play ball all day and didn't come home until, you know, it was after dark and playing ball and sports, you know, just kind of all day. Whatever the season was, he was probably playing it. He kind of strikes me in that way. Reading off sort of the litany of his experience sort of plays to that as well. You know, I'll say, you know, but David, I haven't seen anything.
I'm sorry, David. Would he strike if I wouldn't have read that to you? Would you have guessed that he was listed as the number 25th ranked all-purpose athlete in the 2018 class, or the number 11th all-purpose back? Looking at the guy on the field,
sure
I never would have ranked. Yeah. I never would have guessed that.
No, that's fair. I mean, to your point, he was a redshirt freshman, and so 2 years ago, I probably read that. You know, that had sort of that wasn't you know front and center that he was rated that high and rated that that dynamic. But I think you're right. I think Saban's got a package for him. And I'll say this, you know, I haven't heard a lot, you know, read or printed, written about him. But if Tuscaloosa News comes out next week and they have, you know, three articles on Slade, then I'm going to swear that they're reading or they're listening to our podcast. 'Cause you made the comment about a couple of weeks ago about Devontae Smith. Smitty must have the strongest hands, and the way he reached down and within that next week, there was a nice big article about the exercises he does for his hand strength. So if they come out next week and they're talking Slade Bolden, then hey, Tuscaloosa News, how you doing?
Absolutely, man. Well, the fact that they have him listed on the bio page as a wide receiver and some other publications have him listed as a cornerback, and here he did play, you know, quarterback in high school, I just think kudos to him that he's finding a way to get on the field as a redshirt freshman, all 5'10", 190 pounds of him, at a place like the University of Alabama, right? I mean, kudos to him. Like, hell, Tua's there and Tua's brother's there. And there's, you know, he's like, okay, I'm not going to be quarterback, but I'm going to find my way to nudge myself on the field and to do everything I can, special teams, et cetera. And after seeing him a couple weeks now, I was like, man, I mean, kudos to the kid. So we might have, if he keeps stepping up and, you know, running the wildcat and, you know, stopping a fourth down fake punt, and hell, next thing you know, he's going to be kicking extra points, man. It's just awesome for this guy. It's a cool story. So what
else? I think so. No, I'm good with the Ware Slade. I think we gotta kind of poke at that, but, no, that's good stuff. That's absolutely good stuff. Who would have guessed, when was the last time we played four different players at quarterback? You know, if you count Slade, we did that Saturday. So where else you want to go on offense?
I just want to talk real quick about, do you think there is a push here, a concerted effort to win two of the Heisman?
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, you know, he had an okay day. You know, I say okay. He had a really good day. Not quite as good as what he did against South Carolina. Yeah, but you know, the five touchdowns. That's really really nice. I think the RPO is, it, especially with the slants, it's almost designed, for the quick strike slants, and the receivers, especially Ruggs, are so fast. And so and I say that to say this. Literally, the play is a run pass option. That's the RPO part, right? And so he's passing because that's what the defense is giving, as surprising as that sounds. So you would think if we were running a concerted effort to give him the Heisman, we would do a couple things. It wouldn't be RPO as much as it would be just straight out pass plays, and you know, more intricate routes. Also think we would keep Tua in the game longer. And so I don't think it's a concerted effort. Now we get into, you know, a big SEC game, and we might leave him out for an extra series and let him toss a little bit more, so he gets that fourth or fifth touchdown against an LSU or against, you know, Texas A&M, because those touchdowns probably count more than a touchdown against Southern Miss.
Well, we talked about the weapons he has at his disposal, right? And we've talked on podcasts before about, you know, guys, you need to sit and enjoy this, because these are some special wide receivers, right? And, you know, these quarterback, the John Parker Wilsons who were throwing to Julio's thinking, damn, I wish I'd have had these guys that, you know, I could split all over the field. So to your point, just the skill set of these wide receivers is probably why they are, you know, he's going to the pass so much because they are open all the time. Right. I get that. But by the same token, the fact that he was 17 of 21 for 5 touchdowns, and the fact that the announcers point out another game where he's had fewer, he's had more touchdowns than incompletions. I mean, that's just mind-boggling. Even though he didn't break 300 yards, 17 of 21 for 5 touchdowns? We'll never see this again from an Alabama quarterback, dude. That's just freaking ridiculous. Yep.
No, you won't. And remember, you know, and this goes back a couple of years, but remember, you know, there AJ McCarron was a starter for, you know, 2 or 3 years. And so we had sort of the perfect McCarron stat line, right? And it would have gone something along the lines of, you know, 17 of 22 for 243 and 2 touchdowns. And, you know, Tua tightens that up a little bit, almost gets to 300 and, you know, 5 touchdowns. And so, you know, he rounds everything up off what would have been, you know, what we used to call the perfect McCarron stat line.
Oh, I want to say, I even think it might have even been as generous of like 20 of 30 kind of deal. And so, you know, if it was, you know, because let's face it, right? Quarterback in the NFL, if they're completing 65% of the passes,
sure,
they are deemed to be doing a good job. And so by the flip side, you know, the quarterback that faced the Alabama defense is known. I want to say I heard the announcer say that you know, that he had a very high stat line last year in his completion percentage. Well, he had a respectable 17 of 26, one touchdown. Whereas the other quarterback 17 of 21 for 5 touchdowns. So it's just an unusual stat. Or just a unusual phenomenon that Alabama's blessed to have. What jumped out at you on offense? How did you feel like Najee did?
Yeah, I thought Najee maybe have listened to the podcast last week.
He came to the party, right?
What's that?
He came to the party.
Well, he did, and he did exactly what I was suggesting he wasn't doing last week. And so I don't know if he was sort of playing off his experience and his success last week. I kind of kidded in a sort of a Facebook summary that I put out after the game that maybe he had listened to the podcast. Clearly I don't think that, but he was hitting the hole and running in the running lanes. And I think even Saban commented that he was hitting the hole, running in the lanes. I'll add better than I've ever seen him do that. And so I think that, you know, he had the first 100-yard rushing day on the season, and I was maybe his second in his career. And he seemed to play with more energy, more enthusiasm. I've seen him run angry, and when he runs happy, he seems to run better. He seemed to be very comfortable on Saturday, and especially comfortable running in the running lanes, letting the offensive line, you know, let the blocks come to the offensive line and let the line do their job. And hand in hand, right, you know, chicken or egg, the offensive line played a lot better too. And so did the offensive line play better, or did the running back run in the running lanes, which allowed the line to look better? I don't know which of those comes first, but they're both true of the Tide's performance on Saturday.
I think there could be a little bit of both. And, you know, just like we had a stat from McCarron, right? With the two-headed monster under Saban, we used to always say the starting tailback needs 20 carries to get going, right? He needs 20 carries, and the backup gets 10 carries, so we run the ball 30 times.
Yep.
Well, a good stat line would have been the primary back doing 20 carries for, you know, getting 100 yards. Would have been a 5-yard average. Dude, to his credit, had 14 carries for 110 with almost 8-yard average. So he got it done with only 14 carries. So
yeah, he really did. No, he really did. And I take nothing away from Brian either. I think he had some really hard running lanes, and I think he ran the ball really tough inside, and you know, got a touchdown for it.
I was pleased
with his performance too.
No, I was, but I think this game showed a little, and obviously there's more games to be played, but this game showed a dynamic nature in Najee's repertoire that Brian doesn't have.
I agree.
Nothing against Brian. No. Brian's going to get the tough yards, but I think Najee flashed in this game. And I don't think Brian flashed. I think Brian just brought his lunch pail and went to work. And I think Najee flashed a little bit.
No, I agree. We said last week, that, you know, Najee is the better athlete, but doesn't run inside. And so he doesn't maximize it as a running back. Well, he put that together Saturday in a way that I've not seen him do probably in his career. I mean, he's had good days before and, you know, good carries here and there, but in terms of sort of full package, I think that's the best that I've seen out of him. And, you know, for good measure, he had a receiving touchdown too. And that was a great formation, you know, just to kind of pick on that. We were in 12 personnel with two tight ends and Najee out, you know, flanking the tight ends. And so one tight end curls in, you know, more aggressive, a curl in, and, you know, another tight end sort of runs, and it's at the goal line. So there's, when I say it's sort of a slant, it's, you know, he runs out 3 or 4 yards and then slants over, and then Najee kind of peels off the other way. And that creates a lot of congestion there for the defenders. And I think with the tight ends both motioning, you think somebody's going to stay in a block. With the tight ends both motioning, it left Najee uncovered. So that was the easiest sort of pitch and catch all day. But the fact that, you know, there's a little bit of design there with the route runners, and then of course you put Najee out there because he has the athleticism. It was a really good day, and I hope to see the game planning and then just the athleticism and call it engagement of Najee. I hope to see more of that as the season progresses.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Well, you were touching on the offensive line, and we talked about this was their time to step up because Devontae Brown is, you know, ready to, you know, to come back after his 4-game suspension. I do think they played better, but I don't think they played. I think that they didn't play well enough to keep Brown off the field next week. I'll say it that way.
No, I don't either. I don't think so either. Now, I think they played better than they have all season. And so we said they need to play like it's a contract year. They need to play like every one of them wants to stay on the field. And I think they did that. And when I start hunting for who's going to come off the field, I'm not so sure that I know who that may be.
Where does Deontay go?
What's that?
Where does Deontay go though?
I don't know. And I think he's a guard, and I think he's more natural, a left guard. And so, you know, that puts Evan Neal at sort of the top of the list. You could say that, you know, could Deontay flip over to right guard and does Landon go to center? Yeah, that could happen too. And I don't think center's is Landon's natural position, but do you sacrifice a little bit there for the sake of getting your best five on the field if that's the way it nets out? I mean, I think you do. I think it'll be interesting. I still am bullish on the line getting better, and I predicate that on Deontay Brown coming back and getting a starting position. I guess now that it could happen as early as this next week, I don't know who I'm comfortable saying sits down, but we're going to see him play, and he may not start the game, but I think he plays most of the game. And I'll say this for the listeners. I've seen a lot of people maybe complaining about, well, Deontay doesn't look like he's in shape. Tell me when he ever has looked like he's in shape. He has got a terrible body, but is an incredible road grading player. And so for all the sort of the angst over, he looks like he hasn't been working out. Well, he's been working out with a team. There's no question about that. And he looked as frumpy as anybody last year and was one of the best linemen on the field. So I don't think there's a connective tissue there. I just think that's don't know. I want to say fans sort of not paying attention. I hate to phrase it that way, but I mean, I don't know. Did he ever look like, you know, did Deontay Brown ever look like Landon Dickerson? I don't know that he ever did.
No, that's fair. But how do you think Saban plays this? Because obviously they tried to appeal the 4-game suspension to at least try to minimize it. What do you think Saban does? What sends the message that Saban wants to send? Does he let
Deontay
Brown come back as soon as he can? Because obviously Ole Miss is not the Ole Miss of past Ole Miss teams. And then you have a bye, and then it's time to strap it on at Texas A&M. So You want to give him game time before Texas A&M if he's going to be one of those five starters at Kyle Field. So
yes, you want to get some reps with, you know, that first unit, right? You absolutely do.
Unless though, Dave, Saban is like, you shouldn't have put yourself in a position. Like, is it a message sending of, okay, well, now you've got to earn your way back and you're not going to start and you're going to get some reps, but you're going to work your way back into a starter?
I think absolutely Saban is going to, you know, require that he earn his position back. So that is absolutely true. Does that mean he has to sit, or has he earned, could he have earned his position back in practice? I think he very well he could. I have noticed that this week and less so in prior weeks, he's been listed as running with the twos. I think he's always done that probably a little bit, but during the media observation period, it seems like less. Seems like I saw more of that last week and this week than previously. So I think he has been, you know, sort of given, call it the green light to compete back for the position and have a runway of competing for the position as opposed to being held out until now. So I don't know. I'm going to say two different things. I don't know that he starts Saturday against Ole Miss, but I don't know that he hasn't been earning his right to start in weekly practices.
No, that's fair, right? Because it's not an injury situation, right? So right. I don't think he starts. I think it sends the wrong message to the team if he does start. I think it would be non-Saban-like for him to start. And I see him running with the twos when the game is – you know, when the twos come in, and then I see him having to use the bye week to earn his way back to be a starter that runs out on the field in College Station. That's my guess.
I would say this. I would say watch for – I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just going to be a little more subtle. Watch for that last possession, and you never know really when it is because, you know, Saban keeps guys out there. But watch for that last possession. When it's still the starters and they haven't gone to the twos, watch if Deontay comes in that series. And I bet that he does. I bet that he gets at least one series with the ones and then stays in when the twos come in.
That's fair. That will definitely be worth watching. Well, tell me what else jumped out at you on offense before we do mini game ball.
Well, just Henry Ruggs. I mean, he had a career day in the first quarter, and his second touchdown, the longer touchdown, Tua put that ball out, and Henry, I mean, he's so fast. I don't think it was a bad throw as much as, you know, Ruggs is just so fast, and he had to wait for that ball, you know, just a hiccup, and that allowed, you know, sort of the free charge and safety to gain some of the ground. And as soon as Ruggs caught it and almost did a full turnaround, as soon as he hit the Jets, he started pulling away from that guy. And I thought that's darn impressive, because the guy had the angle, he had the momentum, he was catching up. And how many times have we seen a guy catch the ball and then is tackled where he caught the ball? And Ruggs just has the speed where he was able to wait for the ball and then turn it on. And you could just almost see the defender, you know, just the disheartening sense that the defender must have had that, you know, I'm never going to catch this guy if he has that kind of speed.
Well, and he did a good job of running away from him, because he was at the hash when he finally got turned around and started heading to the goal line. He was at the left hash, and then when he entered the, you know, end zone, he was right by the pylon. So he also has the football sense to, you know, make him chase me toward the pylon from the hash, and therefore he's not going to be able to. Just like we said on the kickoff play, right, in the other game, this just shows his football awareness of, you know, somebody going through all that effort to turn themselves around to catch the ball would just be so thrilled they caught the ball. And if they got tackled, they'd just stand up and say, look at me, what I did.
Look at my big play.
He's like, no, this is my chance to score. And right. So that's just, you know, that's just what sets him apart in his skill set.
And he does that, and it's so electric that Jerry Jeudy has the quietest 2-touchdown day I've ever seen.
Yes. Yes. And everybody was talking about Ruggs. But I will also say, though, that not only will we not see this again with Tua, but with this stable of wide receivers, with a quarterback who throws you open. And you know, Jerry Jeudy a couple weeks ago was doing some interview. I think all three wide receivers was doing an interview with some SEC ESPN personality, and they were talking about the fade route in the end zone. And they had just done some segment the week leading up to, maybe it was leading up to the Duke game. And they were talking about the fade route, and Ruggs was covering Jerry Jeudy, and you know, they were talking about one way they keep defenders from being able to play the ball is they literally just pop their hands up at the very last second. And mm-hmm. they're literally just running the route, and they're not really even looking back to the ball. And then they just barely look back to the ball, and they still keep their hands down, and they pop their hands up above their head at the very last second. And they're like, that way the defenders can't just, you know, get a beat on the ball and try to knock it out of our hands. Well, dude, you can only do that when you have a quarterback who can throw the ball through a keyhole. I mean, you can't do that unless you have a guy with this kid's accuracy where you can just put your hands up at the last second, the ball just be sitting on the palm of your hands.
Yeah. Well, how many times do we say on this podcast that the ball placement, that the receiver just plucked it out of the air, the quarterback couldn't have run down the field and handed it to him any more smoothly than that pitch and catch. And that's a testament, you know, clearly to the receiver, but, you know, also to the quarterback. And you're right. You don't hear that very often. You don't see that very often, but it is truly, you know, the blessing of the Tua era at Alabama, because, you know, I've probably said that more times in the last 2 years than I've said it in my lifetime, you know, watching games.
Absolutely. Well, anything else on offense before we do mini game ball?
You know, we've kind of gone away from the tight ends. You know, after the first game, the first couple of touchdowns were tight ends. I think it's going to be interesting to see that sort of rotate back in into the play calling. I think that's going to be there. But it's just there's a lot of weapons, and this offense, there's room for it to improve, and we're going to start to see it with the running game, Deontay, you know, continuing to spread the ball around. It's about to get exciting on offense, I think.
Oh, absolutely. But it does look like Miller Forstall is getting the lion's share of the run.
Yes.
In that situation, right? Well, tell me who's your mini game ball on offense?
Well, I'm kind of torn. I was going to I think we've talked about, you know, where I was going to go with the mini game ball. You know, I was going to pull out Slade, sort of wear Slade with a Wildcat quarterback, you know, a completion as well as a tackle. And then I was just going to throw some mini game balls at the offensive line. So I think I probably covered my mini game balls. What do you got?
Well, I wanted your take on the beef that was brought in short yardage at the goal line. And the job that and the player I saw was number 85, but 85 doesn't line up with the roster sheet.
Yeah.
There is an offensive lineman looking gentleman who came
yeah.
in those short yardage plays. And I think he got enough push and brought something to the table that maybe Major and Miller is not going to be able to do in that situation that we might see more of.
Yeah. It's the Rudolph kid, offensive lineman. He changed numbers to 85. I did not notice that in the game. But I did read something post game about it. So I think that's a good observation. You know, clearly, and we've taken, here's what's interesting, right? We've taken a couple of times this season. I've seen, Matt Womack, and I've actually seen, Alex Leatherwood, line up on the other side as a sixth offensive lineman in essence, as in the tight end position. But to take Rudolph, an offensive lineman, and give him number 85, that makes you wonder what are we going to do with that? Because if it was more of a one-off, we wanted a big body out there, then we probably would have brought Womack in, or we would have done something just with a third tackle. But to take him, to give him 85, that's going to be something interesting to watch.
Oh, absolutely, man. It caught my eye because he really did a good job when he came into the game.
Right.
For sure. Real quick, I'm going to give, in the spirit of the mini game ball, as you like to say, you know, we had the Slade Bolton sighting, and if you recall, not only did he do the Wildcat, but he had that big catch in the game with Tua's little brother as well.
Yep.
And that was a nice 20-yard grab for a key yep. first down. And so, you know, the traditional rules of redshirting that have always been in place until they, you know, change these, under the old rules, Talia would have never seen the field, right?
Right.
So because of the rules, because of the change in the four games, what did you think of them tipping the cap to him and letting him get some run with 5 minutes left in the game?
I'm not surprised. I think that's in line with what we've sort of forecasted, is that we're – and again, the rules help with that, right? But I think we're going to see him get some run, an opportunity to get some play, so that he's not flat-footed in the competition with Mac Jones next year.
But they let him complete a pass on fourth
yes.
five at the Southern Miss 38 with 5 minutes left in the game. Did that surprise you that they put him in that situation in his first, you know, couple plays as an Alabama quarterback? We're too far to kick a field goal, so we're going to let you run it fourth and five. In other words, okay, I guess what I'm saying is, and I know we got to flip the field, is – you know, Alabama teams up 42-7 on fourth and five at the 38, runs the ball straight ahead. They don't even try to get a first down, and they give the ball away, right? I mean, dude, when's the last time we saw a Coach Saban team up 42-7 with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter on fourth and five at the other team's 38, let a quarterback pass the ball?
Yeah, I think this is sort of the softening or evolution of Saban too. And I think it's a little bit of what Saban and Kiffin used to sort of butt heads against. And I think, you know, I call it a little bit, maybe Saban's sort of come around to the idea that you can in practice say all you want around, all right, fourth down, we're going for the first down, or we don't get this, the team runs sprints. You can sort of manufacture that pressure all you want, but nothing will equal it's fourth down in a game in Bryant-Denny. I'm going to let you throw the ball. And so you can't manufacture that. And so it was almost like a coaching freebie, because from that distance, we're not going to kick it. From that distance, there's no sense punting it. And so it's in at that point in the game, the score, what it is, that is a freebie. And so let him throw it and let him get that real experience of going to the line on a fourth down and not fourth and one. We're going to, you know, run it or pitch it or sweep it. We got to throw it. And that's you can't manufacture that. And Talia got a taste of it.
No, I agree, man. It was just, very non-Saban-like. So I just wanted to call it out for the listeners, for sure. Well, let's flip the field to defense. Obviously, we've got some injuries, you know, some players that weren't in the game. Talk a little bit for the listeners about who wasn't out there to start with.
Yeah, I think, Terrell Lewis sat out, and, Saban was kind of coy about it. I'd read a couple articles that Saban had given him a day off last week and calling it sort of a maintenance day because he was coming off, injuries the last couple of seasons. And it turns out he had a little bit of a procedure done. And so take about a week and a half to recover from that. And, they gave Lewis the option, do you want to do this during the bye week or do you want to, do it now? And you think, would do it during the bye week so I don't miss game time. But I think there's a bigger picture that says, let's do it earlier as opposed to later so there's more time to get full recovery before, the big games later in the season. And so I think he was held out for that reason. He's played really well this season, and I look forward to seeing more of his play, especially when he's back healthy. He might play a little bit against Ole Miss. I would venture probably just a little bit, get fully healthy after the bye. And I think we're going to see a really healthy Terrell Lewis come A&M.
What do you think the procedure was?
I could have told you if you didn't ask. I think I've read like six articles about it, and it's sort of escaped my mind.
It's all good, man. I just was curious. We can come back to this. So tell me what else jumped out at you on defense. What did you think of, are we going to a base dime for the reason we talked about before versus the base nickel because of the whole linebacker depth thing? Because, Christian Harris got run, but the dime is getting used a lot more than the nickel.
It is. And I think it's a little bit of two things. I think it's a little bit, maybe simplifying for Christian Harris a little bit. And I think definitely playing teams the last couple of weeks that throw the ball around a little bit. And so I think there's a little bit of truth to both of those. I think Ole Miss tosses the ball around a little bit. And so I think we are going to see some of that manufactured depth at the linebacker position. We're going to see more dime, I would say, this week against Ole Miss as well.
Well, and what we're doing, right, is as we talked about before for the listeners, is we are able to play an experienced, hard-hitting safety at the linebacker position by moving Xavier, up there. And yep. He looks very comfortable up there.
He really does. And I would say across the board, and I could say the same thing about sort of two groupings. I think the young defenders as a whole are looking really a lot more comfortable. And I would say the secondary is as well. I think the shift of Patrick Surtain back to corner, Shy at the star position, Trevion looks really good. He is really rounding into form back where he was, you know, later last season. I like Maiden, and in the dime, we're seeing a lot more Jordan Battle. And I think he's earned that position. And again, this is, I've used the term sort of Rubik's Cube a couple of times, right? But I think Battle plays that, you know, that safety position better than Job plays corner. I think Shy plays the star position better than Job plays the corner. And so it's not a one for one, but it's one for relative to that position compared to one for relative to the other position. And so I like the tandem that we're putting. I hate that anyone rotates out, because they're all good enough to start, and they probably would start for most other teams in the conference. And we're talking, you know, seven deep at the position, but somebody's got to when you have that many. And I really like the six that we're putting on the field in a dime. And I know Jordan Battle is more of a safety type. Was really rated at safety, but I did see there was a good article. I can't remember who put it out, but it was talking about how did Alabama win the recruiting battle for Battle over Ohio State, and it had a lot to do with the coaching changes there with Urban Meyer. But one of the things that, according to Battle, that Meyer was telling him is that he was going to make him a big corner, and so that's interesting. We're using him at safety. We've been calling him a safety type, but, you know, some other really good coaches thought that he might have an opportunity at corner, and that may really sort of unlock the question I had in my mind around his versatility and why is he beating other people out? Well, if he had the talent at Ohio State to play a big corner, then certainly a safety in the dime is a good use of his skill set.
Oh, sure, but are you surprised we're not really seeing Daniel Wright?
No, I'm not. And you know what I have heard, and so, you know, breaking news or you know, just referencing, you know, a prior conversation. What I've heard about Daniel Wright is he's a really, really good player, but doesn't grasp all the nuance of the playbook quite as well as some of the others. And so when he's allowed to just kind of play at his speed, he's a really good contributor, but there's just those nuances in the playbook that sometimes slow him down. And I think that's why we're not seeing quite as much of him. What I would really like to see is him master that, because I think he would be, maybe in the starting nickel, but he would certainly be in the starting dime if he could just get over, you know, sort of, I'll call it sort of cross that last sort of cusp on learning the playbook.
All right. Well, what else jumped out at you? What did you think of, it seemed like Christian Harris took a few more steps in this game. And got a few more opportunities than he had the week before. And what's interesting is, in looking at these two freshmen, you know, Christian Harris is the Shane Lee and Christian Harris both seem very athletically gifted and talented. But Christian Harris seems to, I don't want to say the better athlete, because Shane Lee is obviously playing it's very true. Well, but Christian Harris, when things completely slow down for him, he's going to be that dynamic guy.
Well, he is, and he is more athletic than Shane Lee. And that's not a knock on Shane Lee at all. I just think, you know, Christian Harris is the better sort of pure athlete. I mean, he played safety, you know, he played corner and safety in high school. And so, you know, he has that type of skill set. So moving into middle linebacker at this level of football is a big shift, especially for a true freshman. And so we're going to continue to see him evolve and grow and get better. But he played really well, especially compared to last week, I would say. And he had a run fit where, I mean, it's highlight reel material. I mean, when he's drafted, they will go back and show that, because it was just a highlight reel of his reading and coming across and filling, hitting the running back in the hole. It was sort of textbook kind of stuff, and really pleased with his performance. And he racked up 6 tackles. He was one of the leaders on the team. What do you think about Shane Lee? We're talking to both young middle linebackers. It seemed that Southern Miss went after him in coverage a couple of times. I thought that was smart game planning, but it didn't quite work out. But what do you think, Southern Miss going after him a little bit?
Oh, I think it was a great idea on their part. They had nothing to lose. I mean, I was surprised at, you know, I didn't expect them to try to run between the tackles very much, but South Carolina had a lot of success with matching up their big physical tight ends against our smaller secondary players, and even letting their big tight ends, you know, run the ball and sweep plays, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Southern Miss comes out and says, we're just going to go 5 wide, and we're just going to spend most of our time running 5 wide and match up with you and your dime. And it left Shane Lee out there by himself. And so then when they would split the wide receiver out to the sideline, the tailback out to the sideline, and, you know, you would see DeMichael Harris, you know, go out to the far right or far left, and Shane Lee would be all the way on the sideline with him. That wasn't a good matchup for Alabama. I mean, it worked out, but I'm going to tell you that your comment for the listeners about Christian Harris, you know, played safety and cornerback and, you know, here they are trying to put him at linebacker. I can't imagine the terror that the havoc that he wreaked in high school football, as a corner and safety, at 6'2", 239 pounds.
Well, I look forward to him. And again, I think it's more playbook mastery. I think, you know, Shane Lee's ahead of him in that regard. I think there will come a time, and it may not be this year, this may be next year, there will come a time when we go to a dime and Christian Harris is truly the better linebacker to be on the field in those circumstances. And when he has an opportunity to execute in coverage, when he has that mastery of the playbook, because as his athleticism is there, you know, he's just got to have the playbook mastery, and that's going to come.
I knew I should have said that before I let you have the talking stick again. Gosh, everybody knows. See, I was like, you know, he's not going to say that. Let me just go ahead and let him have the talking stick. And then you freaking said it. Yes.
Nope.
When you can have a 239 pound converted cornerback safety in the middle of your package. Oh my goodness. Talk a little bit about just very quickly before we go to mini game balls. I love the fact that they tried to give a lot of these young guys run on the defensive line, you know, because of how thin they are, because Terrell was not in the game, and, you know, because LeBryan Ray was not in the game. Talk for the listeners about what you saw from the young kids, you know, like, for example, Justin, who obviously was running with the ones during August. You know, here's another true freshman getting a start on Saturday. Talk about the young guys and anything that jumped out from their performance.
No, I thought of Justin Iboibi played really well. That was his first start. I think we're going to see him. It's a little bit of a misnomer to say that he was running with the ones, because while that is true, he was running with the ones because most of camp, LeBryan Ray was sidelined. And so I don't know that he would have run ahead of LeBryan. And so it's interesting that they have basically sort of rotated for one another. You know, and they both had essentially the same injury, a foot injury. And so when, I guess when one of them, it bugs them, then the other one plays. And when, you know, and so there's on this like foot injury, healing, feeling better and playing sort of rotation. Hopefully, you know, hopefully we're going to sort of spin out of that cycle Justin's going to be healthy and LeBron's going to come back. But I think that he's going to get better as he is healthy and gets more rotation, you know, in the position. I thought Christian Barmore, and it was at the end of the game, I get it, but, you know, that last Southern Miss possession, Christian just rose up and said, this game is over. And on three successive plays, he made the tackle. And I look forward to seeing him getting a little more run because he looked pretty darn impressive. I've seen him in other weeks.
No, go ahead. See him in other weeks what?
No, I've seen him in other weeks make plays too. And so I think that, you know, he's not going to crack the starting lineup this year, but I think he's going to get earlier and earlier into the rotation. So we have more fresh bodies in, you know, kind of earlier and earlier. And the more play he gets, I think the more plays he's going to make, because I think he's just that kind of athlete, that kind of player on the D-line.
Well, we talk about when you get your opportunity to seize it, and I think he showed the coaches how much it matters for him to be on the field. And I think he earned extra playing time because of it. But, you know, you were talking about Justin, you know, take nothing away from LeBryan Ray. But you hear about, you know, Alabama didn't win the recruiting. You know, they didn't finish number one in college, you know, the national landscape recruiting, et cetera, et cetera. Once again, man, going back to, you know, when we started this podcast, right? How often would we have brought a kid in as a true freshman, right? It would have been 6'5", 283 pounds, and would have even seen the field, much less played as much as that kid did at defensive end.
Right.
I mean, it just shows the talent that he's bringing in and how ready these guys are to play. I just wanted to point that out. I mean, he's not your normal 6'5", 283-pound freshman.
Yep.
What else jumped out at you? I saw Job got some run there toward the end. Were you surprised I guess you're going to say no because these young, because Christian and Shane need the run. But I do think that I wish we were seeing a little more run from the backup linebackers, because Shane Lee or Christian Harris could go down, and we need these guys to get some reps.
Yeah, that's a double-edged sword, right? I think that you don't want to take them out to get someone else reps when they need the reps. And so I think that, and again, I may be projecting a little bit, but I think this is the Belichick influence on Saban, and not back when they coached. I think this is recent. I think, you know, they have recently, you know, exchanged ideas and for my money, I'm seeing Saban sort of demonstrate some of this. I think, you know, the bye week that we have this season is a little bit earlier. And I think in Saban's mind, he's treating it as two different events, two different seasons, if you will. And so he wants to get these guys as much experience as he can in this first phase. When we get into the second phase and we get deeper in the SEC, I think when a game is wrapped up, we'll see those guys rotate out. And so they're playing longer now. They'll rotate out earlier, later, once they've gotten a certain amount of reps in them, a certain amount of, you know, understanding of the position. I think we'll see them rotate out a little bit earlier in call it the second half of the season, than what we're seeing right now.
That's fair. Tell me, what else jumped out at you on defense?
I think that, you know, it's always, you know, we always want to shut out. And so when Mississippi State or Southern Miss scored, you know, it was a little bit of frustration. But if you look at how that happened, it was another dime circumstance, and they were playing matchups, which is smart coaching. And one of the big plays that helped Southern Miss move down the field was a wheel route with Anthony Jennings in coverage. And that's going to be a mismatch. And then on top of the big play, Josh Job hits the receiver or the running back out of bounds on what is Alabama's only penalty of the day after having 11 penalties against South Carolina. That's a big sort of shift. And so that put them in position to score that touchdown. And so you say that's two things that shouldn't have happened that conspired for Southern Miss, you know, to score a touchdown. And so, you know, always say you can score a touchdown, somebody can trip and fall down. Well, that's sort of the equivalent of that. You can have two things that didn't happen the whole rest of the day, and that's how they got their touchdown. But it seemed the defense sort of regrouped after that. I think the offense regrouped as well coming out of half and, you know, continued to put on, you know, a display. So I'd say that for the touchdown, that's not something I'm worried about. It's not like LSU giving up 38 to Vanderbilt.
No, that's true. And poor McKinney got blamed for the foul when it was Joe.
Yeah, I saw that.
But like you said, it was a 37. I mean, Southern Miss was at their 28. And when the play was over, they were at Alabama 17. No, it's a 37-yard play, right? And then you tack on a 15-yard penalty. So it ended up being a 52-yard play.
Yes, yes. I mean, no, you're absolutely right. And I think McKinney was sort of blamed a couple times for, you know, for different stuff going on. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, hey, I understand he's all over the field, but he ain't that all over the field.
No, absolutely. Well, that was huge because they went from their 28 to our 17. But I'm glad you brought this up real quick before we did mini game balls, because I'm going to tell you that on two of the next three plays, when they had first and 10 at the 17, they got away with a pick to get the ball to the three. And then on their touchdown pass to their running back, they picked Christian Harris. They did two picks on three plays, and that's how they scored their touchdown.
Yeah.
To your point, they had a 52-yard play plus the penalty, and then their next two pass completions are on pick plays. I'm not being sour grapes. It was the receivers didn't even try to act like they were running a route. They just ran right into the freaking and on the last one, it was on the young linebacker Christian Harris, and it was very frustrating that's how they lost their shutout.
Yeah. Well, DJ Dale got – I just want to throw this out there. DJ Dale got dinged up, but looks like he's going to be back. For my money, and every report I'm saying is that he's likely back for Ole Miss. For my money, I would not play him or play him sparingly and then, you know, give him some more time over the bye. And I don't know if this is just me projecting too much or if Saban's, you know, subscribing into this as well. We got to keep – you know, you don't just put them back out there because they can play. You have to keep them fresh for the whole season, especially when we're talking. And look, I know Saban doesn't like people thinking like this. Every opponent is important. Any game, you know, you can lose, but we're not going to lose to Ole Miss, right? There's a truth to that. And so there's a truth that you got to motivate the players. And there's a truth also that says, we're not losing to Southern Miss or to Ole Miss. And so you got to strike the balance between can we get by this game without those guys playing, then keep them healthy so we have them when we really need them. And so I bet we see a little bit of DJ Dale, but not a lot.
No, that's true. Well, give me your mini game ball and defense.
I think I've covered both. I was going to give two Christian Harris and Jordan Battle. And I think I've teed off.
You've exhausted those. Wow. That's fair.
Yep.
Well, I'm just going to give it to the young guys who stepped in on the rotation on the defensive front that we've already talked about and got some run. Let's switch it to special teams. Let's tell the listeners what happened to Will Reichard and why Skylar DeLong got the one punt on the day.
Yeah, you know, there's a Coke commercial where out and they're talking about, you know, that your team on the Coke can, and it's this guy at the game and he's talking about, I know our team is no good and we're losing and the mascot's got his, you know, his uniform on wrong and our kicker stubbed his toe on the ball. And so that's funny until your kicker does the same thing. And so in some respects, and I'm, it's gallows humor, I'm sorry, but Will Reichart, and on the kickoff that went, you know, 30 something yards, he kicked the tee rather than kick the ball. And so obviously the ball didn't go as far, and looks kind of, you know, jammed up or pulled his hip flexor. And so, you know, obviously you don't want that for your kicker. So he was out. You know, Bolivis did the PATs after that. Skyler did the punting after that. Will's another situation. You know, I've said this already a couple times. He might play or we might hold him out Saturday, and I'm okay with either.
No, that's fair. Well, Skyler, you know, he was given an opportunity, right, because of the circumstances, yep, to come in and make a punt. And unfortunately for him, he did not get the job done. You know, his long of the day was only 38 yards.
Yep. Yep. And he averaged 37. And so, you know, I mean, he grew, it was a tight grouping, but that's tight grouping around a low number. You know, so I do we see Bernier? If Reichert doesn't play on Saturday, which, you know, I'd call that 50-50, would we see Bernier or would we continue to see Skyler?
I think we continue to see Skyler. I can argue either. Yeah. I can argue either, but I think that there's something to be said to getting Skyler. Maybe we see both. Maybe Skyler's given an opportunity at the beginning of the game, and then if he still is not getting it done, then maybe they make that switch.
Yeah. I just think there's something – there's when your name is Skyler DeLong, you've got to be a good punter.
No, this is true. This is true. Now, you know, before I forget, right after Ruggs had caught, since we are on special teams, right after Ruggs had caught his second big touchdown, you know, a few plays later, we are punting the ball, and he's one of the gunners on the punt return, the punt coverage team, and goes down there with his speed, hustles, gets by the blocker, and, you know, makes the tackle. And I point this out to simply say, this is what makes a kid like this so special, right? Because he could just be like, I don't, coach, you know, by now he could say, coach, I just don't want to be on the punt team, if that's okay. You know, yep, I'm gassed. I've caught four catches for 135 yards and two touchdowns. But yet he's still out there contributing on that play, giving it all he's got. And so while we were talking about special teams, I just wanted to point that out.
No, I think that's spot on, and again, it speaks to, call it the competitive character of these guys.
No, absolutely. One more thing, real quick on defense, because I didn't want to. You mentioned Trayvon Diggs, and obviously, I wish he wouldn't have got hurt last year. After that short kickoff, where they had a short field, is when Diggs made his interception, and just if anybody go back and watch that play. You know, the announcers called it nicely when they talked about he was playing the role of the wide receiver. And obviously he's been on both sides of the ball. I don't know if this was film study on this play or what, but it was, you talk about Christian Harris. Well, this clip's going to be for Diggs after this season, because he played the ball perfectly, read the route, anticipated where he needed to be, got between the ball and the receiver, played the role of the wide receiver, caught it over his shoulder. If the Southern Miss guy would have been throwing it to number seven, that we would have said this would have been a top 10 ESPN highlight for the day. But yet it wasn't, because it was the other team, but just a great interception.
Yeah, it was. It was good coverage all the way down. I did see something where I think Trevion was interviewed and he needed to talk about some film study contributing to his level of preparedness. And of course, you know, the coaching that he gets in the secondary is good, but he was definitely in step with the defender and was able to get in front of the defender, which really stifles what the receiver can do and what the quarterback and receiver can do. And so, you know, you get in that position knowing that the ball is going to be up, and then you can slow your pace and just let the ball come right to you. It was really well executed. And I think it demonstrates, and again, not to go sort of sour grapes again on the championship game, but I think it shows you how Alabama could have been a lot better against Clemson with Trevion playing as opposed to Savion playing.
Oh, absolutely, man. Well, let's flip the page here to these Ole Miss Rebels who have been a thorn in our side for, you know, a couple years in the past. This doesn't look like the year where they're going to be a thorn in our side.
No, they don't. You know, they're 2-2 and potentially, you know, fortunate to be, you know, 2-2. You know, they're allowing almost 400 yards a game, over 200, you know, over 200 passing. I think that bodes well for Alabama. They allowed 29 points to Southeastern Louisiana. There's a ton of Louisiana teams. I don't know that I knew there was a Southeastern Louisiana, but there sure is. And the Lions scored 29 on Ole Miss. So I think, you know, I hate to say Alabama can pick their score because it feels like we say that every week. I think Alabama could just about pick their score. And I think Ole Miss is one of those teams that has beaten Saban 2 years in a row. Saban takes no shine to that. It's also a team, you know, in a border state that we recruit against. And so I think Saban's not going to – doesn't want to embarrass somebody or doesn't want to run up the score. I think Ole Miss is one of those schools that he would not mind crossing 50. And so I've got a 55-13 type score. And if we're still throwing late, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, you know what's interesting? In the last 2 years, he's broke the 60 barrier, which, you know, goes to show you that, you know, he wasn't real pleased with, you know, how that game had turned out a few years ago. It's hard to believe it's all the way back to 2015, the last time that, you know, 14 and 15 is when this happened. I think we are going to break 50, which is, you know, which is fun because Draven doesn't get to do it. So, you know, I'm going to say we break 60, man. I'm going to say it's going to be something like 66-3. And yeah, I think there's going to be some big plays happen late. That's going to run the score up. And I mean, this is a team, like you said, you know, who, you know, lost to Memphis. This is a team that, you know, this is a team that just lost to California, and this team shows that they struggle to put points on the board. And this is going to be when you can't put points on the board and you're leaving your defense out there to allow 400 yards a game, it doesn't bode well against Tua and the weapons that he has.
No, I think you're right. And you know, I think Ole Miss is a little bit sort of distracted too by that California loss. They never should have lost the game. They never should have gotten to the position where, you know, the official ruled a non-touchdown, which really essentially ran out the clock. Even if they had scored that touchdown, they'd still have to go. They were down by eight, so they'd still have to go for two. It's no guarantee that that score wins them the game. And if they get the two, they still have to go to overtime. So you can't say that catch, you know, or, you know, not non-catch, you know, cost you the game, but they sure are worked up about that. And their AD is getting all involved. And that kind of thing sort of lingers and is a distraction. And this is a week that Ole Miss can ill afford to be distracted. And so if they continue to carry that forward, then I think it bodes poorly for them, which that's fine. And so, yeah, 60, you know, three, that's low. I think they're going to toss it around a little bit. And so I'm going 55-13. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe they don't get two scores, but, I think Alabama is in control of the game. Call it early and often.
Absolutely. Well, anything else for the listeners?
You know, I'm just going to give a shout out to, you know, watch Stumptown, that comes out this week. We've talked about that before, and, there's a new watering hole, in Tuscaloosa that's opened up called Sessions. And, I understand that they have just opened up. So, If I find myself in sessions after the Ole Miss game Saturday afternoon, that's probably a good bet. So if you're in town, stop on by. I'll be the tomato-looking guy because I'll probably be sunburned from the game wearing an Alabama shirt.
All right, man. So he will be the tomato-looking guy wearing an Alabama shirt. Then yes. Whenever you hear him say a few things, you'll be able to recognize him. And
that's right.
I can go chat, go talk some shop. So
that's right.
Well, that's right. Well, definitely enjoy doing this and look forward for another win. I'm kind of glad the bye week is coming at the where it is on the schedule because yes. I think we've got a lot of young players that need the bye week to win the bye week, as we always talk about. And we need them as we, you know, continue on to the home stretch of the season.
Completely agree. Completely agree.
All right, man. Well, take us home.
All right. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.